Moo and good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Pink Tron. I am Brent Robinson, and with me today is Steph Etienne. Steph, what are you drinking?
Actually, I have nothing with me at the moment, so
not even recovery shake. Oh, it's all right. All right.
well, my outside ride wasn't that kind of ride. I didn't need a recovery shake.
Fair enough, fair enough. We'll just imagine you're having a Belgian beer later. And with me also is Sean Fogenberg. Sean, as he unmutes from his leaf blower neighbor, what are you drinking?
Yeah, pardon the noise if the leaf blower goes off real loud. We get this every week during the podcast time at this point. But I have... I decided to try something different today, and since I am the only one not boring, I've made myself, I think it's called a Barbados cocktail. It's a Appleton Estate rum, Velvet Falernum, lime, and a bunch of Angostura bitters.
That sounds delicious, actually.
It's pretty
Dang
tasty.
It's the worst. This is it's a good thing we're not in person, because this would be impossible to not drink. I have a cherry bubbly, which is lovely and tasty and nice. And I'm going to a lacrosse tournament this weekend, so we'll see how dry 2024 hangs up this weekend.
I mean, you've made it over 16% of the year, so either way, impressive.
Yeah. It's all right. It's all right. Okay. You know what else is impressive? Riding 18 HWRs.
So,
19.
God, so greasy every week.
And this week's HWR is Greater London Flat, which covers all the city parts of London, and that's about it. Yeah, so none of us have raced this yet. I didn't really check. We'll check on race one as I am actually on Zwift Power checking.
Is it one lap or two?
It's just one lap.
Yeah, so it's only, what is it, 17-ish, 17.3K?
Yep.
You have that lead-in that everyone knows pretty well, right, where you go along the river and then up Northumberland Street. Then you go out toward the Hairpin and in toward the Red Road Mall Sprint. And then you've got a loop where you go up and down the Red Road Hairpin and then back around all of the kind of western, you do the western in-town London loop in a clockwise direction, come back and finish on the mall.
Yep. And it's
downhill
sprint. Yes, downhill sprint. That's right. And it's it's an unusual finish, right? You don't typically finish from there. So you're gonna do like a real sharp turn at the circus there before you go under the Admiralty Arch. So you're not really gonna see the
and
finish
that's with
coming
like
up.
600 meters to go or so.
Yeah. So be aware. Like obviously you're gonna see the countdown, but just you're not really gonna see the finish line until you're through that arch, and it's gonna be behind that arch before you turn around. And I bet in most times that the race is going to be going off before we get there. So be switched on for that. Looks like there's a few people up in the 30-minute range, but the front pack finished in 24 minutes. So it's pretty fast.
Wow, 24 minutes for 17K.
Yep.
All right. So 43 KPH, something in there. For the average,
must be awful close to that. Yep, which like it's flat and a bit. You know, they had 10 people under 25 minutes, so you know they were all probably just all blazing it.
Yeah,
it was even like a bit spread out in the finish. Like,
yeah, I was about to say the top three is a bit spread out, and then second group were more than half a minute. some small groups, but pretty spread out.
Yeah. So I suspect it was like long attacks and stuff like that. So be ready for it. We were just mentioning this, but we'll bring it back here. Is that like this is this particular season of HDBR has felt like there's been more stronger people attacking the flatter stuff due to pack dynamics. I think a little bit of no one who's in the race and stuff like that. So it does feel like there's more of that stuff happening.
Yeah, more of that trademark dumb stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Other than sort of, yeah, watch the Northumberland Street. There will be a push up there. There's not really, I guess there's kind of the climb up a little bit. I don't know what name of that street is, but up where that kind of right hand to left hand turn, there's a bit of a climb up there. It's nothing steep, but just be switching. It goes to about 2%, 3% maybe. So just be a little switched on, but.
Yeah, I mean, it even goes up to 4%. They're near, like, with two or 3K to go.
Okay.
Just a little climb, but I mean, it's not enough that it's gonna break most fast. Like the front group probably won't break there, but if you are just hanging on, that could be somewhere where an upping of the pace is a problem for you.
Yeah, this was race two, not this season, but a prior season, and I remember that that was the move, right? That the big guns really sent it there, and so if you held on to that into the finish, you could kind of finish in the group, and if you didn't, you were in behind. So, yeah, and we are in race. This is the penultimate race of HWR, right?
Yep.
Yeah, looks like that way.
So.
So race 19 of 20, and it's 16 that count.
16 counts. There's two people on page one who've only got 15 results in so far.
But also that means that if you are a kind of bigger sprinter type who has had trouble hanging on to the front group in some of those hillier races, this is a definite good week to replace one of your, replace one of those mountain races with something flat.
Absolutely, yes. This is definitely a, if you're a big power number flat guy, this is a good one for you.
And play tactical, maybe, and search one of the races with fewer participants, or game the system a bit.
Yeah. You race with your time. Is there's a few people who I know who can shoot those corners, but yeah, it's good. It's been a good HWR. So get on out, get around London, and have a great race.
Yeah,
That
haven't
brings
done
us.
too many HWRs. I think I don't did three of them during the season.
I think this is
Yeah.
gonna be the first one I've missed all season. I'm not gonna be back in time Sunday morning to do it, and I gotta go before the next one starts today, unfortunately. Sad to miss. That brings us to, I think, the herd beginner racing, which is sand and sequoias.
And this time it's definitely sentence chorus, unlike last week, where there was a bit of
Oh,
a
yes.
mess up, but
There was some confusion about it. Looks at two and three laps.
that doesn't seem
No,
right. That can't be right.
it's one lap of sentence chorus probably.
Oh, 2/3 of a lap for E,
Okay.
one lap for C and D. I got it. I got it. Like two or three. Oh no, 2/3. Got it. So yeah, not quite a full lap for the lowest part of the division, but.
I'm
Do we
wondering where
know?
that
Yeah, do
I'm
we know where that
wondering where
finishes?
that finished.
Oh. That is a good question. It'll
It
be.
finish? Does it finish on top of Titan's Grove?
That could be it. That is about two-thirds of the way through.
That is almost exactly two-thirds. So I think there's a very strong likelihood.
22.
See if I go to...
That's kind of mean. Like, okay, well, we won't make you race as hard, but the finish is going to be way harder.
Yeah. Yeah, that definitely... well, and the interesting thing, of course, is... So we got this clarified by Nate in the thing. So all categories are visible, but they do start in different pens at the same time. So you can catch on. So, you know, it really might be worth it if you're in those low ones to sell out to hold on just to the top of Titans, because Titans is very draftable. So if you can stick that group at the top of Titans, you will probably get the win. So it is 16.3 kilometers. So 2.4K lead in, and then another.
It's gonna be
14.
Because
that is
yeah, it's gonna,
I know it's
it,
gonna be
it,
right
it,
on the top, but
no, it's, I think it's on that section somewhere in the downhill after, if I see the Velo viewer map, because the top is at around 13K ish in the lap, plus the lead in would be 15K. So I'll probably just after the top of the Titans Grove, somewhere in the rollers behind there.
Okay.
So not so mean. but yeah.
That's still a pretty rough finish. Like,
yeah,
it's still basically where you get to, like, where you get on that, on Titans Grove, is going to determine where you finish.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, there's not a lot that you can do in making up positions on that descent, and it seems like it finishes right at the bottom of that descent or right around there.
Yeah, best you can do is, like, if you're holding the group, because it is draftable, like, especially that direction. So if you can hold the group and you're not on the limit, you can maybe, you know, sprint down the downhill, but if you're racing that, you should be racing hard up that hill, especially from about, there's kind of like two switchbacks there. You're going to want to start stepping on it and try and shake everyone else off, especially anyone who's a big sprinter on the downhill.
Yeah, and for anybody not familiar with Santa Sequoia, it's desert bends through the desert up to LAX, Col de Saddle Springs, Titans, all the way to Titans Grove, back to Fuego Flat Sprint. So yeah, that's Titans Grove section going to be the key one. Not only the KOM, but the rollers before that and after the KOM, try to find a good pace to keep in the draft, because I've struggled with that a lot, to find the perfect rhythm to get through that sections.
Yeah, that is a good point, especially since this is the, you know, her beginner racing series. Like, that is a section where getting your rhythm on the rollers, it is a it, it's I mean, you guys, it looks like it gets raced a lot, like once every month or two. So if you've been doing this series, you probably have a good sense of it. But if this is your first race on there, it is important to not get out of the draft when the roller tips down, because it is quite easy for that gap to widen and never catch that group again.
Yep. Yeah, good. And I guess the other thing to mention, of course, if you're not doing the CD one, your finish is all the way back around to the desert. So there's a lot more catch up time to do. If you're in that CD group, watch when you come across through the past the stone, the arch, I'll call it, and down, because it goes down pretty steep. And then there's a steep up bit, and you can definitely get shaken on that little kick if you're not on it and paying attention. And you can also catch guys there if you're, like, a little bit off the back. If you got some juice there, that is the place to step on it and try and, like, make up 3-4 seconds if you're just off the back of some guys. And then, you know, it's rolly descent and then finishing in the desert So, you know, you got a little more work to do. That one, I think, will, there's a good chance that that group, like, if it breaks up a bit on that climb, that it will come back together on that descent a bit, if you can get some cooperation, some work going. So definitely stay with it. Good. Well, good job, everyone, for being everything. Thanks to Nathan Tracta for the notes on how the things work.
Yeah, and it's a nice course for beginners. Little bit of everything for people drafting in the desert and more climby rollers. See what you can do.
Yeah, I think it's a really good like climbing course for like beginner climbers, right? Like it's not so hopeless. You're not going to be like full stopped like you were on Innsbruck or the Alp or something ridiculous like that, right? So it's a good beginner climbing course because you can climb, but it's not so hopeless, and you can still hang with the group. So, good stuff. That brings us to Climber's Gambit. We are on. This is still the I Love Climbing series, I think Chris called it.
Yes, yeah. I Love Hills.
I Love Hills.
The final week of this series.
Yeah.
Last week of the series.
So this week we've got Epic KLM Forward on the Big Loop. So the climb starts at around 5K in. But the climb itself is so that's actually enough to get a decent warm-up in on the road if you need it. And then the climb is Epic KOM Forward, 9.5K at 3.9% average. That 3.9% is a little deceptive because you know you've got like long segments of it that are around 7. And then you've got the kind of rolly bit at the top. But yeah, that first, the kind of the start of it is pretty steep. And then you've got a like 3 to 5% bit over the bridge, a long segment up to the castle that's in the kind of 6% range. And then after the castle, you've got another 6% for a couple kilometers until the rollers start. So at that first 2/3 of the climb up until the start of the rollers is where most of the differences are going to be made, I think. That's actually my personal best 20 minutes was until just a little bit after the crest where the rollers start. So for fast Cs, that first 20 minutes should get you to the rollers. There's a couple of kicks and then a like 3 minute, 6%-ish section to finish, where if you are with a group, that could be decisive, but most of the differences are going to come from that first section.
Yeah, I think this was the climb that I did my best 20 minutes raw watts on, and I think for me that 20 minutes got me somewhere pretty close to the start of the rolls. I think I got to somewhere in that
like in
gallery
the
tunnel.
Yeah.
Somewhere there, roundabouts.
Yeah, you have to really be on it to get 20 minutes, eh? Like TJ's best is a 19:45, Kev Ballard's is a 20 flat. Even Phil Clark, who is an extraordinarily strong rider, is a 19:23. So
I mean, this is the real, like Matt DeFreitas has done a 20:40. So it's not something that most people are going to get up in 20 minutes. But you know, fast Bs are probably looking in the 23 minute range in This is one where like an HWR climb is going to be faster than your climber's gambit time.
Oh yeah, for sure. The drafty bits.
It only averages 4%, so you are saving probably a minute ish from draft if you're doing the same power and you do have someone with you. But yeah, so those fast bees are probably in the 22 to 23 minute range. My fastest was a 26, and that was the one where I did 20 minutes to the crest of the rollers. Yeah.
Good. I mean, epic is what it is.
We all know it.
Yeah, most of us do. Yeah. I always hate the tunnel, right? The tunnel always seems to be the life sapper. Right, isn't that the tunnel right before you hit the rollers?
Yeah, so that area for me actually is, so the times when I've really given this a full effort, that has been the moment where it's like, okay, I'm almost done, because I'm usually going hard until the rollers, and then I just am surviving from there until the end. So I kind of like when I hit that section, because it's like, okay, finally.
Yeah. By full climber bike, I think. There's some Tron.
Let's see. I mean, I probably rode Tron in HWR. So we did this as HWR in late December, like right before, like the weekend of Christmas. And I'm betting that I was on a Tron for that. Because again, you had like, there was some flat, the draft matters. For this, let's see, what we had this in Climber's Gambit in July. And I don't have screenshots
June,
in there.
June of 2023, yeah.
Yeah, I could see the argument for either. I don't know if I'm going to be doing it, but if I do, I could see going climber. I would probably go climber for this.
Yeah.
Because it is like, there's it's a long segment of like 6% for that first 20-ish minutes.
Yeah, and draft is off, right? So you're not gonna be going as fast as you would in the pack through the flatter bits, right? Like, especially when you get to like that 3% across the bridge in the pack, you'll still be 35 kilometers an hour or something like that, 32. But you won't, in this, you'll probably be under 30.
Yeah.
So
I think that's right.
Good. All right. Congratulations, everyone who's done all the races in the I Love Hills series. And, have a good race this weekend. That brings us to the herd of mountain goats. 2.5 laps of Bologna, so 3 times up Bologna. Okay.
Wait, where are you seeing that the herd of mountain goats stuff? Because has it been updated
on the main schedule?
On the overall, on the overall, it's the series has been updated.
Oh, look at that.
But yeah, 2.5 laps of Bologna.
I guess I needed to refresh the page.
Mountain goats. So anyway, 2.5 laps of Bologna. So it's going to be 6K of mostly flat, 2K straight uphill, back downhill for 2K, which takes about
Minden.
Yeah, maybe less. That's right. Because you're over 60 kph for sure down that
I mean,
hill.
this is
You're
that's
almost 100 for sure.
this is the place where I've gotten the 100 kph badge.
Yep. So yeah, so straight downhill for maybe a minute and 30 seconds at most. And then 6K flat, well 12K flattish, 2K back uphill, 2 minutes or less downhill, another 12K flattish, and then another 2K straight uphill to finish. So
woof.
You're gonna 16, 32, 40K.
And that's 40K at race pace rather than the Chris Greenland Memorial Fondo of 100K of not race pace.
Yeah, I suspect it's going to chill out. Well, number one, I mean, I hope there's enough racers in your race that this is like group and there is groups to ride with once you get past the first climb, because that can be a thing. So, I mean, I suspect in between it will be very chilled out between climbs. I would be very surprised if people are attacking hard between the climbs.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that's basically it, is like, do the best you can, probably if you can target zone two in between, and then smash, smash, smash up the hill.
Yeah. I mean, in a lot of ways, this ends up looking like a extended recovery, three by 7 to 12 VO2 workout if it goes as you hope it would.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you're going to do it three times, so you're probably not going to go full send. Like,
no.
Like, if your normal best Bologna is, say, 125%, it'd probably be about what some people would do for threshold, 125% of threshold. Probably pretty close to what some people would get. You're probably going to aim for more like 110% of threshold, or maybe even less than that, 105% of threshold. I'm just saying, if my threshold's like 320, like I would probably do like 330, 340 would be my target.
Yeah, I could see it going a little harder, because you're like, again, it kind of depends on what the groups are doing. If there's a group,
true.
You want to be with the other people after the first climb, if possible, and if that means everyone's going near max the first time, stick with them, because you're not making up a ton of ground on that flat unless you're actually not recovering.
That's true.
That's like, true. Hopefully, hopefully it means that like people are going threshold plus or low VO2 on the first two climbs and then going really hard, like doing whatever they've got at the end. Hopefully that's the pacing strategy, but you kind of do have to like assess what your group is doing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is you're going to have to watch yourself, because like if you blow up on the hill, you are blown up. Mm-hmm. There's no like, oh, I'm blown up on the flats, I'll cruise around at 38 instead of 41 kilometers an hour. I mean, you are going to be stopped. And I mean, yeah. I have seen people make up 30 seconds in like a second or third Bologna climb for sure. So, you know, yes, you'll get your recovery, so to speak, in. But I mean, it will be, you don't want to blow up hard.
No.
Because you there will be time to make up on the hill. Potentially people who do blow up hard. So, fun mountain goats. That brings us to the stampede. We are doing, I think I've got it for a full run of sugar cookie. Oh no, pardon me, 17 kilometers custom. So there's a long lead in.
I was about to say full of sugar cookie. This is gonna be a very long TT.
Yeah, no, sorry. 17K. I think the idea was you could do it and then finish the route off if you still haven't finished those routes yet.
Yeah, a full route would be a mean TT.
Yes.
It's a like that would be a 40K, but with a like decently hard K, decently hard climb near the end as well. But this version,
this is my net downhill. This is the net downhill route for the series.
Is it? Tell me why.
Because you start up at the jungle.
Okay.
Jungle pens. You start at the jungle pens. You go down through the jungle, and then 17K will finish you, like right around Sasquatch Sprint, I believe, is where I was aiming for, give or take. So it's down in the ball. It's like at the last, between, it might be closer to Woodland, but in the right around those last two sprint banners on the coastal part into the woods. So it's downhill through the jungle and then basically kind of flat to rolling across the bottom. So it's a net downhill.
Which means take your fastest TT bike.
Especially with stuff. I mean, there's no ground. There's no way you're going to make a bike swap or anything else. So yes, just take your fastest TT bike, ride it down through the dirt. And then away you go. In terms of, I think what it also means, though, is that the pacing is actually pretty even. Because you're not going to be going that fast downhill because of the dirt. So,
I think you do want to keep your power on that downhill. It's not like you're recovering there. Like you're just, I think Brent's right. It's just find your, call it 25-minute power.
Yep.
And just stick it there.
Yes. C's and D's might be closer 30. To 30.
Yeah.
Yep. But yeah, A's I think will probably be awful close to 23, and B's will be 24, 25.
So it's 17K.
Yeah.
I think even C's are, like, I think you're going to average 40K on a TT bike
not quite
downhill.
Flat. Yeah. Yeah. But just through the dirt. So
yeah, but
I just know on my TT bike in the dirt, getting over 40 is tough.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't know. Maybe if I get home in time Sunday night, I'll still do this one because
it's fun.
I like it. A net downhill. There's so many hard places to find a net downhill route. Like I always try to put one in, and it's a little easier now. I saw that James did that mountain mash course that they put in that goes from the jungle pens up the epic reverse, and I was like, just make it turn left from there and go down the hill into town. Like it would be awesome.
I mean, I'm still waiting for them to open up those the descending courses on Vontu and on Alp.
I know.
They got pens.
I know. They're sitting right there teasing us. Yeah, I'm trying to think. There's no other. The only other places you can really get downhill from is the McCurry Pens next to the castle. You can go downhill from there a bit, but that's about it.
Yeah, I guess anything that starts up in Yumezi and then goes down to Urukazi would be a good net downhill.
Yep. Yeah, but even I think if you start at the like the village pens, it's barely downhill from there. Like I know you go down through either the wind tunnels or well no, if you go have to go up into the city, Nyokyo, and then go down, it's close. If you go down, what's the other? I don't know what you call the other thing, the gorge there.
Yeah.
It is downhill, but it's so long that it's like not as much downhill as you might think. You start from those village pens. But yeah, if you start from the castle pens, it's downhill for sure. I always like to have it one downhill TT.
Ooh, Bullseye this week looks fun.
Yeah, I was about to look today.
You're looking at rooftop rendezvous. Six laps, six sprints. Finish at the top.
Ooh. Yeah, that's brutal.
I was about to say we did five laps for our ladder club championship, and I think that was already brutal, but six laps. And
yeah, I find the timing of that finish is really, really tricky.
Well, so do you think this is going to be a sprint? Or do you think this is whoever has the strongest 4-minute climb?
I think that people will go hard on the climb, but I think you'll still need to hit probably eights to win the banners because the guys,
people will be able to climb as well
for
as
B's
you.
And A's for sure. I think you'll need to go that hard. A's might even need to get into the tens to win because some of those guys will be able to go that hard and still hold on and win. A little lower than that for C's and D's, I guess. But well,
D's especially because you're
D's
doing
might still need to sprint
six
that hard.
Laps.
Yeah.
I don't know that. Yeah, we'll see. It's a fun race for Bullseye.
And I think it comes around and then goes right back up, right? Like, there's no like recovery after that. Like it's just up, down, up, down, up, down.
It's a little repeat course.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying, like, is this just like whoever is the best climber is going to win? Because you may not win the first one, but being able to repeatedly do your 3 minute climb, 3 to 4 minute climb, like,
except it's so,
it's super draftable.
It's well, yeah, exactly. So the guys who are, you know, obviously if they're straight sprinters and can't do any 3 to 4 minute stuff, like that really just burns them off, you'll take them. But most of the people who are that good a sprinter are good at 3 to 4 minute stuff too. Maybe they're not as good.
But remember that the reason that this average is 3% is because in the first half of it, there's lots of flat.
Yeah.
But the second half is like 800 meters at 5%.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean about the timing part, right? Because you do that first half, and then I always sort of mark the real, like, where the race starts as, like, you go up, like, there's, like, a column in the middle, right? You go past, like, the soccer field, and there's, like, a little column, then you go, like, you turn to the left, then you go spiral around to the right, and then you start up to kind of, like, the train tracky bit or something like that. It looks like a little road, maybe. And it's from there, like, those two segments of it are the hard part. Like, those are where the race is won, give or take. Although at the top, it does flatten out for like 300 meters before it makes the U-turn back to the banner. So, you know, it is, and that's what I mean. It's tricky to decide, like, do you try to shake people right when it turns onto that centerpiece? Do you wait till you get onto that road piece and then you like try and shake people? Or do you just try and hold people and then before it flattens out, start your sprint to take, come off of people? I never know. I don't usually win this, so I don't know the right answer. Someone asked Mark John. He's beat me here several times.
All I'm saying, like, I think that there is a good chance for a strong climber who, even if you don't win that first sprint, if you are able, you might be able to, like, keep the power on, put a gap in on that descent, and right away.
Yeah. If you're like Matt DeFreitas and you got the more diesel-y engine and stuff, that would definitely, on sort of by the time you get to like lap three, lap four, like, you're going to want to go all the way from the bottom and see if you can break the sprintier guys off.
Yeah.
Especially if they've been beating you in the sprint. Yeah, that's a fun bullseye. I've done a bullseye on that. I think I did badly.
Full arrow or Tron?
I'd say Tron. I think. I think it's steep enough to justify getting a little lighter.
I'm not sure that is right. I think it's full arrow.
I think so.
So, you know, standard, it depends on your category, blah, blah, blah. But,
oh, yeah.
Like, certainly my fastest time on this is over 20 miles an hour.
Fair enough.
So a 320 is 21 miles an hour. Even 4 minutes is 17 and a half. So you're cooking on this, like.
Yeah, well, and I guess the other factor in that too is, like, you're looking at a sprint finish too, right? So definitely, mm-hmm. Having the most aero in the finish is going to matter, right? The finishing speeds will probably be in the 60 kph range, I would think. I think you'll get up that fast from that top of that climb.
Well, does the wait, so does the is the finish at the top or is the finish
the
down.
Only banner is at the top.
After the downhill is the banner. It's
oh, it's at the right. Bottom.
No, I think the banner is at the top.
The lab banner is down when you start when you're about to start a hill.
Is there a lab banner down there?
Yeah, there's a lab banner.
Oh, is there?
Yeah. I've done it 5 times in the club, in the ladder club championship, right, so
fair
I would
enough,
know.
Fair enough. I guess it's the virtual lap banner.
Okay.
Oh, well, definitely arrow then, if that's where the laps are.
Yep.
But how come he doesn't do it? How come he hasn't got it for two sprints each lap? Anyway. I thought I remember when we did Bullseye, we had to do finish at the top. We had to, the banner was at the top. But you are right, there is a virtual lap banner at the bottom. So, all right. Well, if you listen to the picture on your Raising Bullseye, post a comment and ask Mark or Craig where the banners are for sure for the sprint points. But Steph is right. There is a virtual banner at the bottom. But there is a KOM banner at the top that you go through. So we will double check with Craig and Mark and put a comment in the Facebook page. your herd racing experts here in the Big Drawn every week.
Do we actually help people, or do we just obscure what might actually be going on?
I don't know.
One more Herd Winter Racing next week on the UCI Harrogate course. Do we know what's that? So that's a fun course. I don't know if it's one lap or two. One lap, so a 20-ish minute race. That'll be a fun one.
Yeah,
hopefully I'm feeling healthy enough to do that one. Do we know what's happening after the end of HWR? Has that been figured out?
I think we were talking about doing like an interregnum series or something like that to get us to a potential.
I was about to say that's a bit too early for summer league, probably.
Yeah.
I know that there was talk of Omnium at some point, but we're working around Zwift Games, so that's not necessarily scheduled yet. And then ZRL is going to be in April. But yeah, I'm interested to see what we...
They're talking about potentially doing a Masters series.
Okay.
I won't spoil the name because it's pretty good, but I think that seems to be the leader.
And how long? Potentially like a month or something of that.
Yep.
Cool.
That seems like the most likely thing. A 4-week experiment.
And I feel like that works because most of us are in the Masters category anyway.
Yeah, so it's like age group racing. So that's going to use the UC. Well, again, this is subject to approval by Zwift and various other caveats, but it will be a
group based maybe not even series. What's been settled on yet.
So it would be some sort of age group based racing for 4 weeks.
Cool.
And then targeting Omnium for like latter part of April.
Great.
So that is what's coming down the pipe likely after HWR finishes. All
And
right.
then HBR next week is on RGB, so a nice quick lap around France.
It's flat, but the aqueduct, and maybe some bumps at the end.
Yeah.
Good, good. And that brings us to Round the Horn, which we are going to talk about doing long trainer rides because we're getting into training for outside stuff. I'm training for a long Fondo. Steph has got to do some training on some long stuff. So just sort of as if you're kind of maybe you haven't done as much long stuff, maybe you're getting your training and you want to do it. So just some tips and tricks about things to think about when you're training long on the trainer. Keep entertained, all that kind of stuff. So I don't know, what's your number one tip, Sean?
So I've got a couple of things. One is distracting myself with the movie or something. But I think the thing that really helps is tricking myself into thinking that I'm doing lots of short things. So when I am able to do the best long ride, so usually this means like, okay, I'm doing like some zone two training, but it can even be like, so on Sundays, my usual plan at this point is do, and it kind of depends on what the course will be, but so I'll do like Climber's Gambit, and maybe do two or three laps on that climb. And then I will finish Climber's Gambit, exit out of it, and then jump in with a pacer bot for an hour, and then go join a group ride or something like that. And you end up doing 3 hours, potentially even with some intensity, but you're not like, okay, that like you don't look at the screen and see I've been doing a 3 hour ride. Like at no point does your elapsed time in any of those rides go past an hour. And so it's like, well, you know, whatever. This doesn't feel as long. On Thursdays, like jumping between different group rides, like hopping in with the like Herd Thirsty Thursdays and then jumping on and doing something else, and like getting a few different group rides in is another good way of kind of tricking yourself into like accidentally doing a long day.
Yeah, the stringing different things back together is definitely a trick I use too. Like you do a race and then you kind of cool down. It's like, all right, now I'm going to maybe put on climb portal and go do a climb portal and do the full climb portal. And that's like, all right, now there's a little group ride I can jump into. Yeah, that's a good one too. I think I think in terms of things to remember too, like you're going to get hotter and thirstier indoors because you're probably sweating more, most of us, than you would outdoors at that sort of volume of distance. So bring extra water. There's no reason not to.
Make sure I think the one potential pitfall of, oh, and then I'll just jump into this one other thing. And if you're not actually planning ahead that like today I will be doing 3 hours, if you just like keep hopping into the next thing, and you don't take the time to get off the bike in between them and say like, okay, well, I'm going to do this one more thing, so I should grab the nutrition for that one more thing. That can get dangerous because then you like accidentally, oh no, I've done 3 hours and I've only taken in 60 grams of carbs. So like having a good sense of how long you would like to end up riding and then making sure you've got the nutrition for it is important.
Yes, you will be having not a very fun time if you get to like 2 hours and you haven't taken in any nutrition of any kind. You'll be a hurting unit for sure.
I even just riding long zone two, if I haven't planned well enough, By hour three, even if I'm taking in some carbs, like that kind of, like it's not quite a bonk, but that like lightheaded, like, ooh, am I okay? feeling is not fun. And then can actually, this is actually something that I have found is that like if you go a little too hard and haven't been fueling well enough, that feeling that you get of like, I am not well fueled enough can actually inhibit your appetite afterward and prevent you from getting the proper nutrition in after your ride.
Well, you feel garbagey and you're number one, you feel like garbage, so you don't like to do it again, and that's not really what we're here for. I mean, training is hard, but it's not supposed to be torturous that much. But yeah, you can't recover properly, right? Because you're all messed up.
Like when I get into that hole, I find it really hard to eat anything. And so the only thing I can actually get in is more liquid calories, like doing a recovery shake or something. But it really is important to like keep on top of the nutrition as you go, especially on long rides, because once you are done, you are not keeping up with your nutrition. Like even if you are eating 100 grams of carbs an hour, if you have trained your gut to be able to like just dump carbs in yourself, you're still not getting, you are not fully replacing what you are expending. So it will be important to fuel afterward to replenish. And like I find that if I have not been keeping up on the bike, it's really hard to eat afterward.
I must say, I am an absolute vulture after a bike ride. I'm terrible, and the worst part is I'm like not particularly choosy about it either. It's like whatever type of like, oh, peanut butter on a like a jelly bean is definitely going in my stomach right now because I just biked for 3 hours. Okay, what's like that behavioral psychology term for when you like you. Do something and then you're like, oh, I just did this thing. So like compensation theory or whatever, you know, it's like, oh, I just biked for 3 hours, so now I can totally eat 16 pounds of marshmallows.
There's also a bit of like your fatigued brain is not good at making choices.
That too. So yeah, again, like fuel properly so that you don't feel like that, and then you'll make better other choices, which will, you know, presumably, is at some extent the purpose of which you're out there doing long rides on your trainer. Bring dry shirts. Like, I don't know about anyone else, but I find it gets very uncomfortable to be as wet as I sometimes get on the trainer. So, dry shirts, dry bibs, even. Like, I've literally, especially when I did like PRL full, I definitely had a bib swab in there because I mean, not to get too gnarly about it all, but like, when your bibs get that wet, they start to like not do the things that bibs are supposed to do to stop you from feeling uncomfortable down there. And so like getting a little dry off and a dry pair of bibs actually makes a big difference.
This is, I mean, if we're going in that direction, when you know you're going to be doing a long ride, maybe making sure you've applied some chamois cream is not a bad decision.
Chamois cream's not a bad idea. Yep. I sometimes skip the chamois cream because I just don't like to have to clean up that much stuff, but it can be miraculously helpful.
I've actually never used cream ever before, and I've done pretty long rides, but never used it myself.
I
But
like
yeah,
the
in the
chamois butter.
chamois butter. I've used chamois butter. The ASO stuff is actually magical. It's got like a little bit of kind of minty menthol-y stuff, so it kind of like feels very refreshing, actually.
But yeah, indeed, fueling is something you need to do, but also need to train yourself because I've Sometimes on longer climbs, I need to force myself every 5K or X amount of time, drink a sip of your carb bottle or whatever, something, because like you said, it's time goes by fast. You're riding, you think, I've ridden out an hour and a half, and you're drinking like half of your water bottle or your bottle or something. So it's definitely, it can happen. I've happened to it before, and then the end of the ride, you start cramping up and thinking, oh God. I have especially if you have the fuel on your bar. Have all the nutrition on with you, but you don't use it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a good. I mean, that is another thing. Like, there's legitimate practice of feeling and getting used to it and understanding how your body feels when you need it. All that kind of stuff is all part of the purpose of it.
So, one of the things that I we were talking about, like, you know, one of the tricks is kind of jumping into different rides. This was something that got announced earlier this week that we haven't really talked about, which was the Big Spin ride series. So it's a series of group rides, which has a bunch of you know, it like the top of the Alp. As you finish the ride, you go through and you get there's a spinner that gives you certain prizes. And I think that there are a couple of prizes that in particular Brent is going to be really excited about. There's a rainbow tri-spoke wheel.
Oh, that's the triathlon wheel they've been talking about. I didn't see the picture of it, but I saw an article about it. Oh yeah, that's a hot looking wheel. I bet that I'm gonna want that one.
Here I'm gonna share the link here because you're gonna love that. But yeah, so hopping in on something like this would be a good way of.
Oh yeah.
Like, yeah, you like that wheel.
That's amazing. That's definitely 100% gonna be my new wheels, no doubt. Unless it like really slows you down. I don't know what that blue thing is with the aero fairing.
It looks like it's a tri-spoke with a disc, so you know, full triathlon wheel. And then there's like kid unlocks as well. So this does seem like the kind of thing where if you're just, you want to be riding around a lot, like hopping in on some of these and getting all of these different prizes, like seems like a fun way of doing it.
For sure. Yeah.
And there's a weird looking bike that you can get too. The Atomic Cruiser.
What is that thing? Is that what it's called? That is a strange looking device. I guess the only other thing I'd say is make sure, like, you know, when you're outside, like, do you guys use rocker plates, either of you guys? I don't have
one. No.
Yeah, I mean, like, when you're outside, you're going to get a little more moving around in motion and stuff. So like, if you don't have a rocker plate, do, like, make sure you're, once in a while, you get up and just pedal out of the saddle and shake your stuff out. You know, just move, get different stuff involved. If you sit too still, you're going to find it's not good. So if you got to like force yourself up a climb and get out of the saddle on the climb,
that's what
around.
I do every time. Like, so I did, I think it was 100 miles on most of it was on, the volcano circuit, over the Rafa 500. And like, that means every 7 minutes or so, you're going around that loop. And there's that little climb, and that's the perfect, like, okay, every 7 minutes I get 20 seconds out of the saddle where I'm just like slowly grinding myself up there. But you're right, like, I think that I usually on longer rides, whatever route I'm on, as long, anytime there's like a short kick, I'll get into a couple harder, like drop a couple of gears and get into a couple gears harder and just keep with the group, but be up out of the saddle for 15, 20 seconds whenever there's an opportunity.
Good, good. Wow.
Yeah, what helped me, because sometimes with my training plan, I have bigger endurance rides during the weekend, but sometimes the weather is too bad outside to do it indoors. And what usually helps is, for me, like Sean said, movie, but joining group events. So if like Tour de Zwift was on, having people around you virtually to ride with it's kind of nice. And
yeah, I've never gotten into the like the movie while I'm on Zwift, but I am a big podcast guy when I bike, when I'm doing races. Like when I race, I put on like fast music, but when I'm just cruising or training or something like that, I like podcasts. I don't know.
Yeah,
seems like
I have two screens here, so I usually have like Zwift on one, and like when I'm doing a long ride, I'll often do a movie. So like I did the full Lord of the Rings trilogy over a couple of days during the RAF of 500 extended.
Yeah, when I first got into the training and stuff, the one that I watched, like literally I had the entire box set. I still have it to this day of Battlestar Galactica, the original series. That was what I watched when I was on the treadmill. Which, like, you know, that series starts off like it's one of the best television series, I think, of all time. Gets a little rough at the end.
It doesn't end that way.
And you're like, what is happening? Like,
writers, it was the writer's strike.
Fall off your treadmill. Anyway,
I've done watching while you're riding on your own bike, watching some professional bike riding as well. Some it's people on it ride to like a stage show.
Yeah, when we used to have access to GCN Plus, that was a nice way to consume cycling content while on the bike, but no more.
Darn, darn. All right.
Yeah. My cycling viewing consumption has dropped, because usually before there was GCN. What are three races planned? What you finish of that, switch to another race and switch to a third race. And now it's luckily in Belgium we have our national broadcaster, so it's usually they broadcast all the Flemish races and such, and the big races as well, so it's quite nice.
Good. All right, so while we were doing some of that, I looked up the Bullseye notes from the July 26, 2022 event, which was on rooftop rendezvous for 6 laps. And in the comments to that, it notes that yes, there's a banner, but the banner for the points is at the top, but the finish of the race is at the bottom. So it is assuming that the point setup is the same for this event as it was for that race. It'll be points at the top during each lap, but then the finish is at the bottom. So I think to Sean's point, probably arrow, because you're gonna it's double points at the bottom and it's a finish at the bottom on the downhill. So there you go. It turns out we were all right. And I think on that note, we will say thank you to Steph Etienne. Thank you to Sean Fogenberg. Thank you to everyone for listening to the Pink Tron. Enjoy your races this weekend, everybody. Moo and good night.
Good night.